Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Grateful to host the program each day here on Faith Radio. Ted Ross at the controls, Chris is at the phones. And Ted, today we're going to ask the question that Jesus himself asked his disciples, Matthew 16:15. It's still the question of the ages, who do you say that I am? Mm-hmm. And, you know, throughout history and across major world religions, the answer varies widely. And on today's Connecting Faith, we're going to address why Jesus is not just another religious leader.
Yeah, and I've heard the answer to that. He's either a liar, lunatic, or Lord, yeah, you know, is right. One of the answers.
And we're going to talk about it with a great new book written by our guest today, Kenneth Richard Samples, called God Among Sages. And the subtitle is Why Jesus is Not Just Another Religious Leader. We're going to discover anew who Jesus is, and that's really at the heart of what we do here at Faith Radio, day in and day out. Anyway, so excited to have you join in. But I thought before I introduce my guest and we get into that conversation, I wanted to set up the discussion by sharing just a short portion of a message given by a pastor in San Diego way back in 1976. And you may have heard this before, but Dr. S.M. Lockridge takes up the charge to describe who Jesus is. So give a listen to this amazing message.
My king is a sovereign king. No means of measure can define his limitless love. He's enduringly strong. He's entirely sincere. He's eternally steadfast. He's immortally graceful. He's imperially powerful. He's impartially merciful. Do you know him? He's the greatest phenomenon that has ever crossed the horizon of this world. He's God's son. He's a sinner's savior. He's the centerpiece of civilization. He's unparalleled. He's unprecedented. He is the loftiest idea in literature. He's the highest personality in philosophy. He's the fundamental doctrine of true theology. He's the only one qualified to be an all-sufficient savior. I wonder if you know him today. He supplies strength for the weak. He's available for the tempted and the tried. He sympathizes and he saves. He strengthens and sustains. He guards and he guides. He heals the sick. He cleanses the lepers. He forgives sinners. He discharges debtors. He delivers the captive. He defends the feeble. He blesses the young. He serves the unfortunate. He regards the aged. He rewards the diligent. And he beautifies the meek. I wonder if you know him. He's the key to knowledge. He's the wellspring of wisdom. He's the doorway of deliverance. He's the pathway of peace. He's the roadway of righteousness. He's the highway of holiness. He's the gateway of glory. Do you know him? Well, his life is matchless. His goodness is limitless. His mercy is everlasting. His love never changes. His word is enough. His grace is sufficient. His reign is righteous. And his yoke is easy. And his burden is light. I wish I could describe him to you. Yes, he's indescribable. He's incomprehensible. He's invincible. He's irresistible. You can't get him out of your mind. You can't get him off of your hand. You can't outlive him, and you can't live without him. Well, the Pharisees couldn't stand him, but they found out they couldn't stop him. Pilate couldn't find any fault in him. Herod couldn't kill him. Death couldn't handle him. And the grave couldn't hold him. Yeah! That's my king.
That's my king. You'll want to go do a little search on Google and find that and listen to the whole thing. S.M. Lockridge, pastor in San Diego, delivered that the rousing message back in 1976. Well, we got some fresh conversation today, and I'm not going to put my guest up to speak in that same kind of rhythm or tone, but we're excited to bring back Kenneth Richard Samples to the broadcast. He's a senior research scholar with Reason to Believe. It's the premier science faith integration ministry out of California. He's an adjunct instructor of apologetics at Biola University and has authored several books, including Without a Doubt, A World of Difference, and Seven Truths That Changed the World. Kenneth, great to have you back on Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be with you again.
And, you know, you probably don't have to preach quite like S.M. Lockridge did, but we'll have a good conversation anyway.
That's quite a voice and quite a lot of content.
Yes.
Pretty impressive, I'll tell you.
Well, we wanted to just run that because it sets up so well our desire to really elevate Jesus, you know, above all others. And we live in a time today where there's world religions. There's kind of a smorgasbord of religious beliefs, a lot of spirituality out there. And so you've written a new book to address a little bit of why Jesus is not just another religious leader. Say a bit about, you know, God among sages. Is this something that came out of your maybe reaction to the assumption by so many that Jesus is simply just a religious figure?
Yeah, very good. You know, I would say about 25 years ago, I was teaching courses at a public college in philosophy, world religions, logic. And I remember in my world religions course, this was, of course, Southern California, so there was a real diversity of religious views, ethnicities. And I'd have Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and a good share of Christians as well as skeptics in my class. And I remember students asking me, they would discover that I was a Christian, and they'd say, "Why Jesus? Why not Buddha? Why not Confucius or Muhammad?" And I thought then, boy, I wish I had a book I could give them to illustrate that Jesus doesn't just tower above you and me, but he towers above some of the greatest thinkers in the history of the world. And I'm glad that I never kind of lost the desire to write this book, because we live at a time in which pluralism and tolerance, political correctness, people are uneasy about saying one religion is true above the others. And so I think that the content of this book is very relevant for people who are asking, why Jesus? Why not other religions? And is it intolerant to think that Christianity is uniquely true? So I think the culture, the zeitgeist, if you will, as we say in philosophy, the cultural compass of the time, I think needs to illustrate that Jesus is unique. He towers above the rest. There's nobody like him.
You know, it does seem that people that don't care for organized religion are intrigued by or with Jesus. What would you say are some maybe characteristics? Why do people take notice of him?
Yeah, that's a great, I think, insight. I remember Gandhi, the Indian leader, saying, I like your Christ, but I don't like your Christians. I think that Jesus is clearly the greatest individual in human history. His personality, his teachings, his compassionate healings, his life, death, and resurrection make him a person that you really can't forget. And so even Albert Einstein, who was very skeptical and one of the great scientists of the 20th century, undoubtedly, even he said that it was difficult for him to get away from the words of Jesus in the gospel. He had read the gospels and thought that Jesus was this gripping individual. So you're right. Everybody has a view of Jesus. The cults, the religious cults, they have a view of Jesus, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons. But so do all of the world's religions. And it seems like virtually everybody who knows something about him develops an opinion about him. And, of course, he tried to get people to think very specifically about who they thought he was in Matthew 16.
And we'll dive in more as we go along. But I'm curious, Kenneth, if you have a thought about the multiplication of religious beliefs. It seems almost surprising sometimes, doesn't it? Cafeteria religions to cults. I mean, there's just, it seems unending, and many times that it's Hollywood celebrities that kind of lead the way. How can people believe what they believe? You get into that sometimes in your work at Reasons to Believe?
Sure. You know, what's interesting is that the Pew Report recently said that by 2050, there'll likely be 9 billion people in the world. 3 billion will be Christian, given current trends. Another 3 billion Muslim, and then a 3 billion of other individuals. And, you know, what I think is very fascinating about that is even right now, Christianity and Islam make up 55% of the world's population. There are 11 major non-Christian religions, starting with Buddhism and going to Zoroastrianism. I think that even though the increase in nones, people who are atheistic, agnostic, skeptical, that may be as high as 15%, maybe as low as 10%. But we live in a religious world, and from a biblical point of view, that shouldn't surprise us. Some Old Testament scholars would say, for example, that to be made in the image of God means at a fundamental level we're worshipers. And if we don't worship the true and living God, the God of the Bible, we'll find some other individual or some other issue to commit our life to. So human beings are very religious creatures, and I think that's true of atheism. For example, Soviet communism and atheistic existentialism, I think, were very religious type of atheist movements.
In just a moment, we're going to dive in, talk a little bit more about some of the major of religions, world religions of the day. We'll talk about Krishna and Buddha and Confucius and Muhammad, and look at how Jesus compares and contrasts with them. God Among Sages is the book we're referencing, from Kenneth Richard Samples. Kenneth is a senior research scholar with Reasons to Believe. It's the premier science faith integration ministry out of California. He's an adjunct instructor of apologetics at Biola University. And he's authored several books. We do have some copies of God Among Sages to give away. 3 copies. We'll do a drawing for that. And you can sign up for it right now by calling 877-933-2484. And whenever we have resources, we do the drawing here at the top of the hour. So get your name in for that. A wonderful resource, something that will really help you understand the world religion, certainly, and be moved again by who Jesus is. So stick around for more, and you can join the conversation with a questioner as well, 877-93-FAITH. Connecting Faith, we're reflecting again on a clear picture of who Jesus is and why Jesus is not just another religious leader, talking with Kenneth Richard Samples, apologist and senior research scholar with Reasons to Believe, talking about his new book, God Among Sages. We do have some copies to give away. We'll do that at the end of the hour. Kenneth, do we have historically the right picture of Jesus? I mean, are there aspects maybe that have changed over the years, and so we don't, before we compare him with other religious systems, I mean, do we have a clear view of who Jesus really is?
I think that we do. In fact, in my new book, I explore the fact that we know a lot more about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus than we know about the life and teachings and experiences of these other religious leaders. You know, with regard to the New Testament, we have an abundance of biblical manuscripts, and they're very early. And what we discover in that first century perspective is that Jesus, even though he is a first century monotheistic Jew, he makes claims to deity. He has the prerogatives of deity, to forgive sin, to hear and answer prayer. He allows people to worship him. That's not something a first century Jew would do. Only Yahweh is deserving of all of a person's worship. So we have, I think, a very powerful picture of who Jesus is. And quite frankly, it goes all the way back to the first century. So I think we're in a very good position to say that our knowledge of Jesus is a lot better than our knowledge of most great leaders of the world's religions.
Well, you do center in on four leaders of world religions. So maybe just take a moment to highlight those religious figures and maybe say what's attractive about each. So whether it's Krishna, Buddha, Confucius, or Muhammad, just to give us a little snapshot.
Yeah, I chose four. I thought about adding some others, but you've only got so much space in a particular book. So I chose Krishna as the central representative of the Hindu religion, which is more than a billion people in the world. I chose, of course, Siddhartha Gautama, who the Buddhists call the awakened one, the enlightened one. So Buddha is the title. I also address Krishna, the great Chinese philosopher and teacher who has influenced an uncountable number of people. And then finally, I address the probably the most controversial world religious leader, and that is, of course, Muhammad, who the Muslims believe is their prophet. And so I think that what's interesting about many of these, for example, Krishna, I always thought, maybe 10, 15 years ago, that most Hindus were pantheists. They believed that all reality is one, and that one reality is God. So everything is God. The universe is God. I'm God. You're God. But what I've discovered over my research for this book is that most Hindus actually believe in one God. They believe Krishna is God. This is called Bhakti Hinduism. And so it's very interesting now to sit down with a Hindu and say, well, I believe in one God. How does Jesus and Krishna compare? In terms of Buddhism, I actually found the historic Buddha to be engaging. He was very honest about his own brokenness, his own inability to keep his greatest moral ideals. I think Buddha was a first-rate philosopher, and so I'm not surprised that people are attracted to Buddhism, even though I think there are some deep challenges with it. Confucius, a very similar, a great teacher. He has been called the most influential person in the history of China, and we know the history of China goes back a long time. But another person who was seemingly candid, Confucius had a divorce early in life. He was rather distant from his family. So part of his attempt to kind of build a moral philosophy was to uphold the Chinese family and society. And I found him a rather sympathetic figure. Maybe less so with Muhammad, but it was very clear in reading about Muhammad and reading Islamic literature about him that he never claimed to be God, and he realized that he was an imperfect person. But, you know, you think about these individuals. I mean, Krishna is the most influential person in Hinduism. The Buddha is one of the most influential people in all of the Asian world. Confucius, similar. Think of the number of people who have followed his ethical views. And then Muhammad, whatever criticisms you may have of him and Islam, here's a person who was born in, the 6th century into the, so this is the medieval Arabian desert. He is illiterate. He has no parents. His parents die when he's very young, so he's an orphan. And within 60 years, he becomes the most influential figure in all of the Arabian world. These are people who've had huge impacts upon the world, and I thought it would be great to compare them with Jesus, who I think is the one who has had the most influence all over the world, not just in the Western world.
Well, we'll give you a chance to do some comparison, because as you said, you talked about these other religions and moral philosophy. Is that how maybe many people look at Christianity as well, or at Jesus, say, well, it's simply just another moral philosophy? What sets Jesus apart?
That's a very good point, because I think that there are times within Buddhism and Confucianism, for example, there is the point that maybe these are more moral philosophies than they are religions per se. And certainly even within Islam, it's not a religion of redemption or salvation. It's more a religion of moral reform, if you will. I think Jesus stands out in a number of ways, and Christianity is unique in that context. Jesus makes divine claims not true of the historic Buddha. I mean, evolved Buddhism, the original form of Buddhism is called Theravada Buddhism. The Mahayana variety evolves a couple hundred years later, and they worship the Buddha and various other deities, but the original Buddha never claimed to be God. Confucius was said very little about religion and God, although there are some scholars who think he might have been a theist, but he doesn't make any claims to divinity, neither does Muhammad. And even the claims of the divinity within Krishna, you know, Krishna scholars are not sure whether the Krishna ever lived. He may have been a purely mythological figure, or our ideas about him may encompass several different individuals along with mythology. Christians are criticized sometimes because we debate the exact year of Jesus' birth. Was it, 5 to 4 BC? Did he die in 30 or 33 AD? Buddha scholars don't know what century the Buddha was born in. Was he born in the 6th century BC? Was he born in the 4th century BC? These are differences. We know a lot more about Jesus. Jesus is clearly the only one who saw himself in divine terms. And another difference would be the Buddha is imperfect. Confucius and Muhammad are imperfect, broken, fallen individuals, if you will. Krishna doesn't represent a holy figure, even in the depictions of him, but nobody can find fault with Jesus. I mean, he says to his family, which of you can point out sin in my life? I mean, try that with your family and see how that goes over. And even Pontius Pilate says, I can find no fault in this man. Jesus is the only faultless human being, apparently, to ever live on this earth. These are some of the differences, his divine claims, his moral life, his compassion and healing, that separate Jesus not just from you and me. It's not just you and I that don't compare all that well with Jesus, but even the greatest thinkers in the history of the world pale in comparison to this Jewish teacher from Nazareth who Christians think is both God and man.
We'll talk more about it in the moments ahead, as well as how we might be able to effectively build a case for Christianity. So we talk God among sages, why Jesus is not just another religious leader, with Kenneth Richard Samples. He's a research scholar with Reasons to Believe. But we do have some copies of God Among Sages to give away. We'll take your calls to sign up for that. 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Today on Connecting Faith, and on who Jesus is. Jesus asked his disciples, recorded in Matthew 16. It's still the question today. Who do you say that I am? And among world religions, lots of different views and beliefs. Kenneth Richard Samples has done a little summary of that and gives us some great tools and ways that we can effectively share and talk about Jesus, that he is not just another religious leader, as the subtitle of his book suggests. We're talking God Among Sages with Kenneth Richard Samples, who is an adjunct instructor of apologetics at Biola University, and he's senior research scholar with Reasons to Believe. You can find out more about their great work at their website, reasons.org. Kenneth, I'm going to have you share a little bit about how we might be able to maybe build a case for the superiority of Jesus talking to maybe a coworker or a neighbor that has of a different worldview. But I'm wondering if, you know, if someone is, does state religion influence belief and practice? So if I'm a Thai in Bangkok, does that mean I'm Buddhist? Or if I'm in North Africa, does that mean I'm a Muslim? Maybe U.S. residents consider themselves Christians as well because of their birth.
Yeah, very important point and question there. Certainly it's true that, you know, Buddhism has a huge influence in much of Southeast Asia. Islam is very influential in Southern Asia and, of course, in the Middle East. I think it's also true that India is largely Hindu, although it also has an Islamic population there as well. In North America and Europe, of course, historically, Christianity has been the dominant religion. I think, though, what we also need to give consideration to is, you know, even 50 years ago when I was a young boy, if you wanted to talk with a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Muslim, you'd have to go overseas. Today, I live here in Southern California. It's one of the most diverse ethnically and religious parts of our country. It's common to work in a business and have Muslim coworkers, Indian, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist coworkers, or, you know, maybe your kids are on the soccer team and one or two of the families are members of other religions. The world has come to our doorstep, if you will. And so today, even if you were born in India or China or Southeast Asia, you could be influenced by all kinds of thinking. And even if you're born here in America, if it's Los Angeles or New York or Chicago, you're going to have lots of encounters with people who hold different religions. That's why I think it is so important and why I wrote the book largely for Christians who could learn to, you know, build some common ground. What do I as a Christian have as common ground with a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Muslim? And then what are the unique features of Jesus that I could share with them? Those are the kinds of things that I get into the book. And I also think it's a book you could probably give to somebody who actually holds a different religion who might be interested in knowing who Christians think Jesus is.
Well, could you give us maybe just a little examples or a little flavor of how we might build common ground or maybe some strategies to set forth a case to talk about Jesus, maybe even just to get into a spiritual conversation?
Yeah, very good. I think a very positive place to be to build common ground. And again, I mean, much of the field of psychology indicates that if you want to have any hope of reaching someone, potentially persuading of them, you know, you need to meet them where they are. You need to kind of build some commonality and then move to some of the areas where there may be debate and difficulty. I think one of the great areas that you can talk with Hindus and Buddhists, Confucianists and Muslims are about ethics. All of the major world's religions, you know, believe roughly in the Ten Commandments, certainly the second five of the Ten Commandments, that it's wrong to break the sexual mores of the religion or the culture, that it's wrong to lie, that it's wrong to steal. Most religions believe that you pretty much want to treat people the way you want to be treated, what we might call the golden rule. Confucius even had what they call the silver rule. Don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. Jesus puts it in the positive. You know, treat other people the way you want to be treated. I think we can begin with a common belief that humans have inherent dignity and moral worth. We, of course, as Christians would say that's true because we're made in the image of God. And then we can begin to start building a case. That is looking at Jesus. Jesus is the one who is preoccupied with his identity as being both God and man, not true of the historic Buddha or of Confucius or Muhammad, and unclear when it comes to Krishna. But moreover, what would God be like? What would you expect God to be like if he made an appearance in the world? Would he act like Jesus? That is, would he engage in an incredible healing ministry, reaching out in compassion to people who have leprosy, people who cannot walk, people who cannot speak? Would Jesus, in effect, be, would God teach the way Jesus did teach? And here is a unique feature, Neil, that I think is critically important. Krishna, Buddha, Confucius, and Muhammad, none of those four religious figures actually do anything that changes the status of their followers in the next life. That is, Krishna cannot break moksha and lead you to enlightenment. The Buddha cannot guarantee you'll make it to nirvana. Confucius didn't do anything for his followers to change their view in the next life. And Muhammad cannot guarantee you paradise. But Jesus suffered on the cross as a means of sacrifice, a means of atonement. Jesus took our sins upon himself so that he could change our state with God. And so one of the points that I think is critically necessary to convey is that Jesus does something for his followers that all of these other religious leaders, with all of their wisdom, with all of their insight, their influence, they don't do anything that fundamentally changes their followers before God and the afterlife. So what would God be like if he made an appearance in the world? I think the resume of Jesus is pretty convincing. At least his character, his qualities are much more divine-like than any of his competitors.
Kenneth, are you concerned or maybe amazed to see the increase in the nuns category, those at least in the West, and I guess probably Great Britain as well, a significant increase in this category of people with no religious preference at all? I mean, even though we are inherently, spiritual in nature, it seems like so many people are just not even plugging in whatsoever.
I think it is a very interesting phenomenon, and again, the Pew report might indicate that the nuns are somewhere between 10% and 15%. Certainly, we understand Europe in the last 50 years and North America to have an increase in secularism, and I certainly think, I mean, there are again debates and questions about how. What will Europe be like in 2050? Will it be an Islamic continent? Because largely Europeans are having very few children. Muslim families have lots of children. That changes the dynamic. I think that there are many people that are distrustful of religion. They're suspicious of religion. They view science as maybe a better way of following. And that, of course, is why Reasons to Believe does what it does. We try to reach out both to the secular thinker and to the religious person. But, yeah, the phenomenon of the new atheism is interesting. Personally, I think the old atheists were more formidable than the new atheists. But I do think the new atheism is more in your face. It is more confrontational than the atheists I grew up reading.
By the way, Reasons to Believe, you can find out more about their great work at reasons.org. Reasons.org is the website. Kenneth Richard Samples is the senior research scholar with Reasons to Believe, and he's an adjunct instructor of apologetics and the author of several books, including The Latest God Among Sages, Why Jesus is Not Just Another Religious Leader. You mentioned, though, that there's, people are distrustful and suspicious. And, of course, and we've sort of touched on it, in this age of pluralism, here we have Christianity being so exclusive. How do we respond to the charges that, how can this be so exclusive?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think a way of doing it is to say, look, I know you think that if I make a religious claim that Christianity is the one true faith, that sounds intolerant. It sounds bigoted, narrow-minded. But, you know, let's look at it as, let's think about it as clearly as we can. I mean, historic Christianity says that Jesus is God incarnate, that Jesus is God in human flesh. But Islam, the second largest religion in the world, they say Jesus is not God incarnate. Well, look, logic would tell you that those two statements clash. They can't both be true. Jesus can't be God incarnate and not be God incarnate. That would violate the law of non-contradiction. So the law of non-contradiction would say both of those statements can't be true. And then another logical law, we logicians call the law of excluded middle, says that it's either or. Jesus either is God incarnate or he isn't. There's no middle ground. And so I would then say, look, logic indicates that not everybody can be right. Somebody's wrong about who Jesus is. Christians and Muslims have different ideas. So somebody's wrong there. And that's not bigoted. That's not narrow-minded. That's not intolerant. That's a matter of reason, logic, and common sense. I'm just being faithful to what my holy book teaches, and I'm trying to compare it as fairly as I can with what other holy books teach. So I think we need to spell it out and say, look, all religions can't be true because they contradict each other. So, you know, sometimes I think we give too much credit to political correctness. We give too much credit to kind of a hypersensitivity. I think we need to lay out the claims and look at them as carefully as we can in light of reason, logic, and, of course, Scripture.
You'll find Kenneth Richard Samples has done just that in his new book, God Among Sages, Why Jesus is Not Just Another Religious Leader. We do have some copies to give away, and you can sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH. Kenneth is Senior Research Scholar with Reasons to Believe, and you can find out more about their good work at the website reasons.org. Kenneth, the blessings to you. Thanks for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
Pleasure to be with you. Got a great show. Keep it up.
Kenneth Richard Samples joining us here on Connecting Faith. Coming up in a moment, Joe Bender will talk to us about our ministry spotlight, CARE International. We'll find out more about it in the moments ahead.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Well, our faith radio ministry spotlight for this month is CARE International. CARE is a nonprofit organization that operates charitable hospitals and specialty programs in 30 countries where medical care is often most needed and least available. In the places where CARE serves, children with disabilities are often viewed as cursed, unfortunately. And today, together, we can help heal children with disabilities and let them know that they are indeed loved by God. Joining me today is Paul Goldsmith. He's the Vice President of Marketing for CARE International. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about what CARE has been doing recently, and especially about who CARE serves.
Well, CARE serves the least of these, children that are in places where they don't have access to health care like we do here in the United States, and we get the opportunity to serve them and tell them they're loved. As you mentioned, kids with disabilities often in developing countries are known as cursed, and mom is usually blamed for that. And so we get to tell them that, no, they're loved by God, and we can actually treat them. And so we're really excited. CARE's newest hospital is actually a partnership with the Tim Tebow Foundation, and we have the Tebow CARE Hospital in the Philippines. So we're really excited for that opportunity to heal kids in the Philippines as well as 29 other countries around the world.
So I'm reading that CARE helps children with curable disabilities, so things like maybe a cleft lip, bowed legs, a club foot. What other conditions is CARE able to help children with?
Well, that's That's exactly it. Clubfoot Cure is the leading provider of clubfoot treatment in the world. So it's a very correctable disability. And here in America, we treat it right away when a baby's born with their legs or their feet are pointed inward. But often that's left neglected in other countries. And when that's the case, children, they can't go out and run out and play. They can't walk to school and often end up as beggars. And so we're able to come in and treat them through a very simple procedure and help them to walk on straight feet. And when we do so, we also are able to share the gospel at the same time.
So really, it's not just that medical care might not be available otherwise in these countries, but also the perception of children who have these, what we would consider in America to be very curable disabilities, isn't it?
Exactly right. And so oftentimes we hear the stories of parents taking their children to a witch doctor or some other, unnatural cure. And when that doesn't work, they're told to throw their baby away because it's a curse. And we tell them that that's absolutely not the case, that we can treat this. Other conditions we treat in the case of hydrocephalus, which is also known as water on the brain, those children don't survive, and each day that goes by that they don't get treatment, leads to a drop in their IQ points, and ultimately it's a fatal condition. And in that case, we're able to do brain surgery on these babies and restore their life and give them life through generous donations to cure.
Oh, that's just amazing that you're able to do that. And also, you said that CURE provides a message of the gospel to these kids. How do they go about doing that?
Great question. So at CURE, we're founded on a verse in Scripture. In the book of Luke, in chapter 9, Jesus tells his disciples to go out and proclaim the kingdom of God and heal the sick. And so that's CURE's mission statement. And so we don't think it's good enough to correct their legs or their smile or give them a surgery and not give them the greatest news of all, the message of Jesus Christ. And so in every CURE hospital, there's a medical director and there's a spiritual director. And the medical team makes their rounds just like they would at any other hospital facility. But the spiritual team also makes their rounds to the bedside of the children and moms who are staying in the bed with the child. And we're able to pray with them and get to know these kids and families because oftentimes they're in the hospital for several days or weeks or in some cases months. And we get to be there alongside that journey. And we hear stories after story of entire villages coming to know the Lord because that curse that they were known as, they come back to their village and the child's running and where they couldn't walk before. And now they're a miracle. And so it's just an incredible testimony. And, in the Bible, three-fourths of Jesus' miracles were healing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people wonder, what would Jesus do? What's God like? We don't have to ask. We know what Jesus did. He healed people, and he called us to do the same, and that's exactly what CURE does.
Mm. Well, and it seems like you're really uniting families again, too. If there were parents who were told to discard of their child because he or she was a curse, then through healing and through presenting the gospel, maybe you're bringing some families and even communities back together as well.
Oh, absolutely the case. Unfortunately, too often dads don't stick around when there's a cursed baby. And the children are the last to eat and just buried away and hidden. And so it absolutely restores, families when they're introduced to the gospel and told that, no, this child's a blessing. And so that's very insightful. You're absolutely right. Because to know that God would provide and would heal their child is miraculous, and that definitely restores families.
So where do the doctors and healthcare professionals come from, and how does CURE pay for their services?
Great question. So we train doctors in countries. So it's not all American doctors that serve in these hospitals. They are from the countries where they serve. So our doctors and nurses in India are Indian, and our doctors and nurses in Uganda are from Uganda. So we have we train and pass that down so that it's sustainable. So these nationals are taking care of their own, and it's not just, you know, white faces, but these are Ugandans and Zambians and Egyptians and Afghanis in Afghanistan, where Cure has a hospital in Kabul, Afghanistan. And so that's really important to Cure, that it's different than their traditional mission model, where, you know, Westerners go off to a mission experience and they treat the children. We train nationals. And in fact, there was an article in St. Louis newspaper this past week telling the story of doctors going to the Cure Hospital in Uganda to get training on the procedures of treating hydrocephalus. So American doctors are actually going to Cure facilities in Africa to get the latest instruction and techniques about how to treat these conditions, because we see it so often, it's so prevalent there. The Cure doctors are the experts. And the way that we get funding is through generous donors that give. And so we're grateful of, you know, Faith Radio's spotlight. We're able to take the money, 100% of the money that comes into Cure goes directly to the hospital to provide treatment.
So if someone's listening today and they want to find out more about Cure, of course, they can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, and we do have a link to Cure there. But maybe they're listening right now and just want to be able to log on. Can you tell us how people can get involved?
Absolutely. There's two great ways. We have a toll-free number. It's 844-303-CURE. That's 844-303-2873 or cure.org. CURE.org.
Well, and your first hospital I see opened in Kenya back in 1998, a long time ago. Tell me how Cure has expanded since then.
Sure. From that first hospital, and that really wasn't that long ago, just 21 years ago, a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon from Pennsylvania, decided to open a hospital in Kenya, and he was really going to retire there and just work there. But then God provided opportunities from there in Uganda and Ethiopia, and it just seemed like each year there was another opportunity to spread, because you know, healing really does change everything, and it's a perfect vehicle for sharing the gospel by providing medical treatment. So from that first hospital in Kajabe, Kenya, now we're in 30 countries around the world, and as I mentioned, the latest is in the Philippines, the Tibo Cure Hospital in Davao City. So it's really remarkable, you know, the ways that God brings people to Cure and is able to provide. And it's really not that well-known of a ministry, but as soon as you're introduced, warning, you fall in love with these kids. And we show the kids. When you go to cure.org, you can see the kids that are in the hospital right now receiving treatment.
Oh, I can attest to that. Your website does just a wonderful job in bringing us directly into what you're doing with Cure. So thanks so much for doing that.
Oh, yes, you're welcome. And we really appreciate the opportunity to get the word out. Chris Tomlin is, you know, a very well-known worship leader, and he found out about Cure, and he's actually a member of the board of directors now. So we're really grateful for opportunities to talk about Cure on the radio. And also, people may have heard about Cure from the recent Chris Tomlin tour, because he's helping us to not be such a secret anymore, which is wonderful, because the more folks that know about it and fall in love with the kids and the ministry of Cure, the more kids we can heal.
Well, Paul Goldsmith, Vice President of Marketing for Cure International, thanks so much for joining us today. And to find out more about Cure and how you can get involved, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, and we will have a link to Cure right there on the front page. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Joe.
Have a blessed day.
You too.
Our ministry spotlights for the month is Cure International, and you can find a link online at myfaithradio.com. Thanks to Joe for sharing that interview with us. You'll hear Joe tomorrow talking with the various leaders during the Fuel Conference. It'll be a great way to kind of wrap up your week and get encouraged and challenged about moving forward in your faith. If you missed part of today's program, want to share it with a friend, you can always find it online. We post the interviews on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.